Welcome to America Weekend.
America Weekend.
Turn your magic on. Let me see it say. Everything you want to dream away. We are legends every day. That's what she told me. Turn your magic on.
Howdy doody, 34 after the hour on the DJV Experience. Doug Steffen, Jennifer Horn, and Victoria Keelan are here. It's World Teacher Day. Who was your favorite teacher? Was it in elementary school? Was it in junior high school? Was it in high school? Would you go into your college prof list to find your favorite teacher? Because after all, they call themselves professors, but they're teachers. And there are a lot of good ones. And there are some that are not so good. We've all had them. We've all gone through that experience. And maybe as you look or think back, is it the first person that had an impact on you? And then through the course of your years in school, there were people who had more of an impact. I always talk about Alice Scipione, who was my fourth grade teacher. I think she's the one who had the most impact on me early. And then there was Margaret Hayes in the sixth grade, Arthur Del Pret and Charlie McCarthy, and Bob Fougere, and Lou Cadarni in junior high school. And all those guys were people I taught with when I was teaching junior high school after I came back from college. And then in high school, I'd have to say it was Dr. Megan, who was the chemistry teacher. A man, he couldn't communicate worth beans, but he was a fabulous guy. And I'm trying to remember some of the other. Tisdell was a history teacher that I remember very well.
Are these teachers that you had, yeah, or teachers just you worked teacher with when you were a teacher?
No. Well, actually,
like
there, was a, little,
room.
Was a little of both, actually, because when I came back after going to college and I was working as a radio disc jockey in Boston in the afternoon, and I wanted something to do during the day, so I started to substitute teach. And within a month, the superintendent said, "You want a job teaching English at the junior high school?" And I said, "Yeah, okay." So I did it for 3.5 years, and it was I had my radio job, and I stayed with it until I got a job to do. I was offered a job to do mornings at a station in Boston, so that's what I did. I quit teaching school, but it was a good experience. And yes, I worked with a lot of. I was the youngest teacher by far. I was 21 when I got out of school, started teaching, and I'm in a high school. There's 18-year-old girls hanging around me. I'm 21. It was a challenge and a half there.
Did you ever, as a former teacher, did you ever have a former student approach you and say, "Hey, Mr. Steffen, you were my favorite"?
Yes.
I'd really like an A. Oh, that would be a difference.
This was after the fact. Yes, I did, as a matter of fact.
That must be a great feeling.
It is. And when still, somebody came up to me. There's one kid named Danny Roseman who runs the junkyard in Framingham. His father was completely lost in school, and he'd be the first. He still calls me Mr. Steffen. Here's a guy who's 58, 59 years old. These kids in junior high, they were only 10 years younger than I was when I was teaching school, so they thought they could get away with stuff. They didn't very often. I was fairly much the taskmaster when I was teaching. But there are those, Roseman says I was the only person that ever could get him to settle down in school. And then there were...
And now he runs a junkyard.
He runs a junkyard.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? He's
really
making a lot of money.
He molded that mind.
Well, he did a good job. He ran his father's business, and he's been very smart about it. He was a smart kid. He just didn't...
His father was like, "If you don't shape up, you're going to be running the junkyard." And then all of a sudden...
Yep.
Running the junkyard. Okay, so how about you, Jen? Teacher, favorite. Best, besides your mother.
My mom is an awesome teacher, but she never taught me formally.
Right.
My favorite teacher is probably from college, Dr. Lori Baker Shenna. She's awesome. We continue to have a relationship. We have dinner every once in a while. And she really got me. She had a very big passion for journalism, for public relations, and that kind of sunk in with me. I think in junior college, because I went there, Dr. Franklin was my anatomy teacher. Really awesome guy. Loved him a lot. And then in high school, you know, it's so weird. I think I was so shy and scared to, like, be... talk to that I didn't really like forge any really close bonds with my high school teachers. I had ones that I liked more than the others, but it's funny how that piece is kind of missing. Grade school wise though, I had lots of great teachers. I had Mr. Morin, who taught me for 7th and 8th grade. I had Mrs. Marceau, my second grade teacher that I loved. Mrs. D'Amato's from 4th grade. I mean, I had a lot of great teachers, I think, that, you know, that especially on the grade school level, that I still really think of fondly. It's funny how high school, because I was going through like, just don't talk to me, don't, you know, I mean, I was a great student, but I never had that bond. And I feel like I missed out maybe a little bit in high school.
It's so funny to think of you as someone who doesn't want someone to talk to them.
Brutally shy. Brutally
shy. When did that change?
Actually, right after high school, I thought, this is dumb. I'm not going to do this anymore. Fake it till you make it. So I just started like faking confidence and talking to people. Right. And now you can't shut me up.
That is so bizarre to think of you as
shy. It's such great advice, by the way. If you're ever struggling with something, find someone you admire, imitate them, fake it till you make it, and then all of a sudden, it just
you're president, just like Trump.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Worked for him.
All right, so Victoria, what about you? Your favorite teachers, tall, short, big, bad, old, young?
You know, I had a lot of really bad teachers in the mm-hmm. beginning of my life, and it wasn't until I hit 5th grade, Mrs. Iacuzzi, Mrs. I, she was the first teacher who really had an impact on me and really, I felt, saw me for who I really am, and she was a game changer and completely set me on a totally different course. So there is such an impact that one good teacher can really have in your life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Turn a kid around.
Completely, yep.
Absolutely, yes. I was credited with that with a few kids. There was a kid named Dignan, and his mother came to me when he was in high school and said that if it hadn't been for me getting on him when he was in the 8th grade, I had him in the 7th and the 8th grade, she said to me, I'll never forget this, that he would have been completely lost if I hadn't. Yeah. And I had no idea. I just was, I could tell this kid was smart and wasn't working up to his capacity. So I would mm-hmm. really, I did that with some of the youngsters, more often young men than women. The women were pretty, the young girls. And I taught 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th grade English and speech. So you had by the time in the 6th grade, they're still like virgins. They really are sweet, nice kids. But then that first year in junior high school, all bets are off. Yeah. They go, you know, because they're given a little responsibility. They start getting more homework. They're going through hormones. Just woof.
Man. 7th grade boys. I have one of my best friends is a teacher, worst. And she said 7th grade boys are just the worst.
Awful. Yeah.
My mom would, like, to her, hell was having to teach junior high. Like, she loved high school. She didn't like younger kids as much, but junior high.
Now, see, I did.
Emotions are running.
I enjoyed it immensely. I really did. Very rewarding. I often thought that I got more out of it than the kids did in terms of what I learned. And the really good, you know, I don't know how much things have changed. This is 40 years ago when I was teaching. I don't know how much things have changed, but I will tell you that there was not just fun, but it was fascinating to see how these kids would grow. And some of them, I watched the 4 years I was there, and it was really rewarding to see them grow up. And I think, frankly, and maybe your mother would say the same thing, Jennifer, I took pride. There was a certain ego benefit from helping these kids and seeing
that it. That was what was so hard for my mom when she retired, is that she won Teacher of the Year several times. She was constantly given kudos for the way that she really impacted people's lives. I mean, she's in books. I mean, Omar Gooding Jr. wrote in Denzel Washington's book about my mom. She had Cuba, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so there was just a lot of reward that she got from an ego perspective. And she goes, how am I going to do this? You know, this is such a piece of my self-worth, you find other ways, I guess.
Yep, you do. All right, so the reason that we have these conversations, folks, is not only for us to share, but to have you. Most everybody gets it, I think. When the conversations we have on this program are aimed at getting you. Do I have to draw a picture here? I suppose every once in a while you got to draw a picture. The reason we have conversations like that is because I want you to think to yourself as you're driving to work or as you're getting ready to do whatever it is you're doing, or maybe you're just sitting there pensively going through the end of your day, because this program is on for some people at the end of their day and the beginning of the day. So I want you to think in your own experience, who was the best teacher you had and what did that person bring out in you that nobody else ever has? Your parents didn't, your siblings didn't, people you work with. There's always a teacher, at least one, that we all think back to and say, my God, that person saved me, or that person got me interested, or I had fun. Every one of you has got at least one teacher that you can point to who is just the best influence that you could possibly imagine. And that's what I want you to do with whenever we ever have, anytime we have any of these conversations. Okay, so that's that. 44 past the hour.
Hi, this is Victoria Keelan from On Air with Doug, Jen, and Victoria. It's time for you to sound off. As one of our valued listeners, your opinions matter. Just log on to djvshow.com and click on the survey button on the homepage. Tell us about yourself, tell us why you listen, and tell us what you think. And as a thank you for completing our survey, we'll enter you in a random drawing where 5 lucky listeners will win $300 cash. So go to djvshow.com right now and click on the survey link. That's djvshow.com.
Think Green with Harrison. Harrison with you. High up in the mountains of Utah, we met with Robert Redford, who's showcasing his Sundance channel to educate about global warming.
And now we're looking at an issue like global warming, for which there is now measurable data.
And what's really going to make this issue work before it's too late are the people that see the issue presented to them. It's certainly not the federal government who's ignoring it at great pain and cost to the country. It's going to be the people, when they get the information, that are going to get active.
If we all act now, all over the planet, it really can get better, right?
If we all come together and act.
Even the network now are realigning to get the message out. Must be something to it. From the Greeniverse, this is Harrison.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Today on App Check, for $3, Tonic helps you carry out your personal health practice, so it reminds you to take your pills. I'm all grown up now, Mom.
No.
Tonic struck out.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Now, cheap psych tricks with Dr. Buff.
And Dr. Buff here. Is your young child having trouble sleeping through the night? Then let the sense of smell come to the rescue. Here's the science of it. Technically, the sense of smell is called olfaction, and it's so commanding that it goes straight to the part of the brain responsible for processing without a detour. Breastfed infants can identify their moms by smell as early as the 6th day of life. So, use smell to keep your child asleep.
You smell like peanuts. I love peanuts.
Say your child wakes up screaming. Well, after you comfort them, place something in the crib that smells like you. Your nightgown or any piece of clothing.
Ooh, I smell barbecue.
What's the chief psychological trick? The child will sleep through the night because they'll think a significant parent is right there with them. You can check out my book, Cheap Psychological Tricks for Parents, at drbuff.com.
Just because you don't have time to read a book doesn't mean you can't enjoy stories about artists and groups that you love. To discover a whole new world of audiobooks and hear the stories that made the music, visit happylandaudio.com. That's happylandaudio.com.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
He spent 14 of his 15 years in the majors with the Seattle Mariners, hitting over 300 home runs and driving in just shy of 1,000 runs.
Deep to left center, a grand slam. Jay Buhner scores 4 with his 15th home run of the year.
So where is Jay Buhner now? Jay retired following the 2001 season. He works with the Mariners during spring training, and the team inducted him into their Hall of Fame in 2004. Jay was immortalized on an episode of Seinfeld when the fictitious version of George Steinbrenner paid a visit to the home of Frank Costanza, played by the great Jerry Stiller.
What the hell did you trade Jay Buhner for? He had 30 home runs and over 100 RBIs last year. He's got a rocket for an arm. You don't know what the hell you're doing.
Jay Buhner, living on in syndication. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Doug, Victoria, Jennifer, who would have thought that there is an organization called the Institute of Scrap Recycling Industries in Washington? I guess there's an industry-wide group for every industry.
And there's lots of scrap in Washington, by the way.
Right. Joseph Picard is here, the chief economist and director of commodities at the Institute of Scrap Recycling. I think that's probably true, Joseph. Don't you think there's a lot of scrap down there? You could probably, it's not of the metallic kind, but you probably could recycle some of those old coots down there as well, right?
Our industry recycles whatever gets thrown our way. So
That's a good thing, right? A lot of people think of recycling as those bins they set out on the curb every week. But it's a lot bigger than that. I recycle on my farm a lot of scrap metal and things that would normally, you know, people would sort of throw out. Metal's not bringing a lot of money. It's something that is a raw material that can be used to make new products. And that's kind of the definition, isn't it, of recycling, using old to make new?
Yep. I think, you know, the scrap industry, as I say, is closely connected to the health of manufacturing, but also to commodity markets and to the global economy as well, because this has certainly become a global marketplace for scrap recyclables. And I think any time that your industry is connected to those larger trends, there's going to be ups and downs in the business cycle. And we've come through a downturn, and I think our industry is extremely resilient and I think really well poised for rapid growth going forward.
You know, it drives me nuts. I have a dairy farm in Massachusetts, and a lot of the guys that work with me, they find it easier and cheaper to throw two-by-fours, two-by-sixes, because the guys who are working, building things, find it less time-consuming to put up something new than to take the nails out of something old. I don't do that. I have piles of wood that I've used from taking buildings down. Isn't it an educational process that's necessary here to get people to understand how important it is to use stuff that has value still and how wasteful it is to toss stuff away?
Absolutely, and I think that's one of ISRI's most important functions. And if you go to our website, www.isri.org, you can find lots of information, not just about recycling and our industry and the association, but where to find a recycler and all the great economic and environmental benefits associated with recycling, because it really is important in today's environmental landscape to stress the environmental benefits of recycling, too. You know, if you use secondary aluminum instead of producing new aluminum, you're going to have energy savings of around 90%. And so that's increasingly important given today's environmental landscape.
I'm betting that all of us can think, Richie, Jennifer, Victoria, of a recycling facility in your community. I can think of two commercial ones.
Just there 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that are there, and that's all part of
your yard.
Yeah, not surprised. But if you think about it a little bit, you can really you can understand how this is such a big business. So you've triggered a lot of ideas in our mind, Joseph Picard. Thank you. The website is isri.org, isri.org. Joseph Picard, who is the director of commodities at the Institute.